It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/redcircle.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work Plus, where we are always doing fun, interesting Marvel or Marvel adjacent rewatches. Today, we're going to be finishing up an interesting leg of our rewatch of Daredevil. If you are just catching up with us, we did 3 episodes on Daredevil season 1, breaking up all 13 episodes into 3 parts. And then we just finished or are finishing tonight with season 2. I am, as always, very excited to get into this with you, Kyle, because we've talked about this whenever you were watching through.
Right.
And again, for people that are just catching up with us, I had watched these seasons kind of back as they premiered. Kyle has just recently, several months ago, went back and rewatched them, just kind of binged through it all.
Plowed through them, yep.
Yeah, I mean, really impressive. So I got your, like, through that, your thoughts on Daredevil Season 2, which blended some into your thoughts on The Defenders. I say that because I've had the same thing as I kind of look back on Season 2, especially the end of Season 2, where, as you were saying that, I was like, man, I just can't really even remember where the end of Daredevil is and the beginning of Defenders is. Like, they're so similar with the Elektra Black Sky thing.
Right.
And so this was the chunk that I was most intrigued to watch because I felt like it was the one that I remembered the least. But I also feel like it's the one that people think of. Like, I feel like these are the episodes that people think of when they think of Daredevil Season 2.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Unfortunate, I think.
Is it the worst chunk of Daredevil ever? Yes, right? Right. Like, I'm not crazy.
Yeah, I think it's got to be. Okay. Now, there are things about it I enjoyed, you know. But, yeah, there's some strange stuff here, I think. Like, there were moments where I was watching it and I was just thinking back to our first season of Daredevil rewatch where I think maybe either part one or part two, I said, man, I think some of these episodes, not all, but some of these episodes are as good as anything that they have done on Disney Plus. That was my kind of hot take.
Right.
And I was watching this chunk and I was like, man, either this is just way, way worse.
Right.
Or I was just like totally warped in my perspective whenever I made that claim about season one.
Wow.
And I like to think that it's the former. Like, I think that this is just, like, I feel like the writing and the directing in particular just took a hit on some of these because, like, some of the performances even feel off. You know, like yeah. I think Charlie Cox is great, and I think John Bernthal is arguably even stronger, and both of them had some kind of weird moments in this chunk even. It's just, yeah, it's weird. It's a big step down.
I am so pumped about today because, one, we're both just in great moods in general, which is always true. Fun. And then these are some of my favorite episodes to talk about, this brand of episode. The episode where it's not very good, but it's a lovable not very good, and it's okay to make fun of it because that's what this is a little bit. And we know that Daredevil as a character gets really redeemed in season three, so it's okay. It's okay to point out a few things here that are just kind of not great.
Yeah.
But I love it. I love it. I love it.
One thing real quick I have to say. As we've been talking, I think Candace just got a tattoo.
You mean like now
in real
on
time.
Air?
Oh, wow. I'm hearing that Candace, co-host of the Friends from Work Plus Comics Corner. I'm just getting live pictures of, there is in fact a tattoo.
What is she doing right
on
now?
On her arm now.
And how did you not know this fairness, is happening?
Okay, a couple things. One, this is not Candace's first tattoo, but it is the first tattoo she's gotten in like at least 5 years.
Oh, boy.
I want to say maybe since we've been married. But secondly, she is out of town on a work trip, and apparently the site where they are working has on-site tattoo artists.
What did she get?
And she got, it is actually, it's very lovely. It's tasteful. It's like a little, it's like a little reed type plant on her forearm.
Okay. And like a peace offering kind of thing?
No, like, I mean, it's like a, like, it's like whatever that, she's gonna kill me for describing it this way. It's like whatever that is that like hillbillies in movies always have between their teeth.
Oh my gosh, she is gonna kill you for that.
What is that, like a wheat stalk? I don't know. What am I talking about?
I don't know. She's gonna come home from her next trip fully tatted up, full body tats, wearing chains.
Like Travis Barker.
And you're gonna be like, what happened while you were out, sweetheart?
What I love is that Candace will not ever listen to this episode, but will almost immediately be tagged on the Slack, and then we'll have to listen to this episode.
That's so true.
And
so
there's going to be a chain of events that leads to her being mad at me.
So hi Candace, because you're now listening to this a couple days late. Welcome.
Man,
that's so funny. Well, anyways,
yeah, crazy stuff going on.
Wow.
That said, tonight,
let's get into it.
I was, normally what we try to do, and we can do a little bit of that here, is break it down episode by episode. That's because in part, these seasons are just so long that it's really hard to try to have a global discussion. I think we can kind of easily sum up the plot points of these last couple episodes.
Sure. We're talking 9 through 12, right? Is that right?
Through 13.
13, that's right. Wow, that's a lot of episodes. 13, sorry.
Yeah. And yeah, because I think there are different plot lines, but they were moving pretty linearly. And I only want to talk about that briefly for folks that have maybe not seen this chunk in a while, or like me, just kind of had vague memories of what the end of season 2 was. Because if we jump right in, people may not really remember what it is we're talking about.
Right.
So, briefly, and feel free to jump in here where I'm wrong.
Not gonna help.
We actually start this chunk in a way that I loved. Like, and I had kind of forgotten where we left off. We had talked, as we've been going through season two especially, and we'll come back to this, about how it really did feel like the way that we broke this up could have been like even mini seasons, like
sure,
Disney Plus length, 6-episode, 40-minute episode seasons or whatever, because our part two ended with Frank going to prison and meeting Fisk. And so the first episode, we got all the background with Fisk, which I really loved. And then that sort of all leads into Frank getting out of prison.
That almost could have been the start of this last chunk. We almost could have added episode 9 to the middle chunk, because you could start this story with Frank getting out of jail. Because I think you're right. I think it feels like it almost fits with that Fisk prison storyline that the middle chunk is mainly about.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, and there are parts of me that think, well, we'll get into that. I think it could be broken up even more. But so that gets Castle back out in the city as a wanted man. And that kind of kicks off this, is Frank actually gunning down all these people? Is he out on a war, or is it really someone else? And there are some kind of high stakes moments that come out of that, like the DA getting shot and Karen's almost shot, and we have the diner scene. And it's like all of these really tense conversations with Frank and Karen, and us always thinking Frank's dying or on the verge of dying. And that's what's going on the Frank side. Do you want to, just in part because I want to make sure I've got a handle on this, touch on the blacksmith side of all that, of Frank, before we move on to what happens with Daredevil and Elektra?
Sure. The Frank and blacksmith side of this entire thing is my favorite part. So,
oh, nice. Okay, good.
The blacksmith turns out to be an ex-colonel that worked with Frank in the war. And when he came back from the war, Frank didn't want to work with him anymore, but he got into the drug trade and became like the highest up drug trader, drug seller to all of these groups that Frank's been knocking off. And
okay, that's what I thought.
He helped kind of facilitate the night where Frank's family got killed. And Frank has ultimately been trying to track him down this entire time, but we have not known who that is. I actually think it makes for an incredibly good, intense scene, very similar to the Michael Keaton Spider-Man thing that I always love, where Karen's at his house and they're having a pleasant conversation, and that conversation turns on one image.
Right.
So that's kind of the role of the blacksmith, and Frank is trying to get him. And then Karen kind of plays into this entire season because she just believes that Frank at his core is not a horrible psychopath, and she feels for what he's lost. And so she tries to convince Frank not to kill him, but that is who Frank is. So that's kind of that side of it. And then the third side of it, so you have like the Fisk stuff, right? Then you have the Frank and the blacksmith stuff. And then you have the Hand and the ninjas and Elektra and how she is this ultimate secret weapon that Nobu actually wants to use on their side.
Mm-hmm.
And Daredevil's kind of falling in love with Elektra, and so he wants to protect her, and Stick is all mixed into this, and there's just so many ninjas and so many people getting stabbed with swords, and yeah, that's kind of the end of it. So there you go. That's the other side of it.
Yeah, because we already covered the giant hole, I think, in part two.
Well, and the hole doesn't factor in a whole lot here. That's part of the stuff that bleeds over into the Defenders, you know? Like, in my head, like you said, I was thinking the hole is a huge part of the season. It's not. It's the Defenders where they're, like, actually in the hole fighting and stuff.
Right. No, I think... Oh, yeah, so the only other thing that... you know, we'll reference here in a bit, Foggy and Matt close shop.
Correct. Yep. So can I bring up some just big picture hot takes and then have you react just in general?
Yeah.
So the first thing I want to say is this season can so distinctly be separated into those three parts. And I was showing Annika a few things from this season because she's never seen it. She watched season 3 with me and 1, but she never watched this one. So I was trying to show her that the Punisher is actually kind of cool. And so I went back in the middle of this and just played the famous speech at the end of episode 4. And it was just such a reminder, which has been a couple months now, of how elite that is and how good it can be. But I was trying to explain to her, like, this feels like the end of a season. And then they go to the whole Fisk side of things, and then that almost feels like the end of a season. You could almost have the Punisher getting out of jail, and that could be the end of the second season.
Yeah.
And then you have this third chunk, and that's where it's like, I just don't think that having this many episodes is always a good thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, these other side stories feel shoehorned in because they had to fill more time. There's no way to watch episodes 9 through 13 and not feel that with certain things.
They were
clearly trying to bring in like 5 different major storylines throughout the season. And they're trying to tie them all together, and it just doesn't work for them to all come together. So this season, to me, this is my hot take, would have worked so much better if you had just trimmed it down to like 1 or 2 of those parts. You could have ended it at episode 4 or made it an 8 episode thing and brought in some of the Fisk stuff and just dropped the hand, and you could have made an awesome season of television. How do you respond to that hot take?
I totally agree, so much so that I had kind of written down the same thing. So to me, that, you know, the obvious thing that you pull out of this, at least for the most part, is the hand Elektra stuff. And I don't like, I am going to rewatch The Defenders now because I'm just curious.
Enjoy.
And because, you know, like, I like watching Charlie Cox be Daredevil. But I remember that plot being not good. And I do, like, I look at this and I think there are things in there that, like, it's fascinating for me because I've read all of the Frank Miller comics that they're pulling from here for the Elektra stuff specifically. And it's one of those things where I'm like, man, they're doing things, like, it's hard for me to blame them because they're doing so much kind of exactly the way that it was done in the comics. And they're these comics that everybody loves, and rightly so, because they're great. Like, they still hold up. But something about the adaptation just does not work. Like, there's something that they were able to do, I think, specifically in making you care about Elektra and Matt's relationship in the comics, like, I didn't quite get to here. And I wonder if, like, it was the same thing, by the way. I mean, because part of me was like, well, maybe they should have introduced the character on some level in season 1. But then I'm like, well, but no, I mean, that's what Miller did. Like, there were, like, what, like a decade and a half of Daredevil comics. And then he just dropped Elektra in and was like, oh, by the way, it was his college girlfriend the whole time. And it worked, you know, like, so it's not like you had to have that kind of foresight. But the reason I say all that is, like, I got to the end and I was like, I don't know, like, maybe season 2 could have been, we get to know Elektra a little bit, like, get some investment in her and Matt, and then a lot of this stuff just gets transplanted into Defenders, so that then that, like, that gives that more emotional resonance, like, because the thing that they do in Defenders, where they, spoiler alert, just, like, bring Elektra back, but without her personality, because she's possessed by the Black Sky or whatever, like, I've said this before. That's like that is my least favorite trope. Like, I hate that's something I really disliked about the end of Lost. Like, I don't like having an actor that played a character now, like, play that character that's possessed by someone else. It annoys me because I feel like it doesn't, like, I have no investment now in this version of this person, and the whole, like, all of the things that come out of that, of like, well, the person fighting them can't really hurt them because they still think the person that they love is inside. Like, it's all super played out. And it's just, I'm always waiting for whatever is happening in those stories to be done. And so I like remember that part of Defenders and I'm like, man, what if we, yeah, like to your point, pulled out the vast majority of the Matt Electra stuff here, or maybe just like basically ended it somewhere closer to where we ended with them in part two, and then let that breathe a little bit. But don't you feel like, as I end this rant, don't you feel like the Matt and Electra thing was like across these 13 episodes, or I guess really across the last 9, because I think she comes in episode 4. Like, it's, I feel like there are so many ups and downs and twists and turns that I'm just like, at the end, whenever he's like so in love with her and so distraught, I'm like, I just don't, like, I don't even really know what y'all's relationship is at this point.
And I can one-up you, because I'm watching that and him profess his love to her, like, we'll run away, we can go wherever, London. It's like, what are, okay, hold on.
Right.
You're forgetting that in this exact same season, at the end of episode 4, he falls madly in love with Karen. They go on a date. Right. They make out in the rain. And it's like, so it's supposed to be so special. He's not going to go up to her room with her because he just wants to savor this moment. He doesn't want to mess this up. That's the same season. That happened like,
right.
That happened like 4 hours ago in real time. Like, and then somehow Elektra enters the picture and he just instantly falls for her. Karen never really crazy demands explanation. Like, right. She's like, okay, you got a girl at your house, like whatever. And Matt never feels bad about that. So I understand what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
You told me this last time, and I love this, that Elektra was falling in love with Daredevil and vice versa. And Matt's falling in love with Karen. And I get that. That makes sense. But it's just not executed well enough then. It's just not.
No, I totally agree. And I like,
the Karen thing is totally abandoned, and the Elektra thing feels out of nowhere. Like, he's gonna quit everything in the city and just go run away with her now?
Yeah.
The whole season's about how he can't put that aside. His daredevilness. That's the whole season. That's the theme of it.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'll just throw it all away to go to London with you.
That's where, right, yeah, because he's, like, he's, we just are not, this season does not do a good job of telling us what Matt's North Star is. Like, I think season 1 does that really well, and then season 3 is doing kind of an interesting deconstruction, reconstruction. Here, I've been so fascinated by the different rewatches we've done kind of outside of the MCU, because they always bring to mind comparisons, but, you know, both within the MCU and without. But when we get to second outings like this, and we've talked about this a few times already, talking about season 2 of Daredevil, but I always, like, I think it's such a tricky thing specifically to do the second part in these stories for some reason. And that's kind of a whole discussion in and of itself, maybe, that we can go into in a separate episode. But it's one of the reasons I'm so impressed with Spider-Man 2 still, because I think that is the rare example of a movie that feels like quintessentially Spider-Man, but it is a sequel and it carries forward the stuff from the first movie well. And
sure.
I think the reason I'm thinking about that now is I think that movie has really kind of two storylines, the
That's
Doc Ock storyline and Spider-Man trying to kind of figure out what he's wanting to do between these two parts of his life. And I think that's kind of what this could have been had they trimmed some of the fat, you know, like, and the reason I think about Spider-Man 2 specifically is because I think that could be mapped on to this, where it's like, I think you could have a version of Matt's Daredevil side being drawn to Elektra and the lawyer, just Matt side being drawn to Karen. And you could end that in a way that's like you're sort of sitting in that tension where it's like these are the parts of his life that are pulling at him, especially if they knew that they were moving straight into Defenders. Like, it's not like they didn't know if they had more runway. Right. And I just think that, like, because I think what winds up happening as we go on with like the kind of Netflix verse is just, it, like, as great as I remember season three being, and this is not denigrating that at all, I remember it being like having to really, it had to deal with a lot of baggage that I think it dealt with really effectively, but like, trying to keep track of the arc just with Matt of like, what he's fighting for, what he wants. Is he with Stick? Does he hate Stick? Is he with Elektra? Is Elektra fighting the hand or is she with the hand? Is Matt like really dedicated to his Catholicism or is he actually like, you know what I mean? Like there are ways where those could all be really interesting tensions and maybe people felt that way, but that's just not how you're right. It was just not executed correctly for how much they were trying to do.
The Spider-Man 2 is such a good example because instead of this feeling like Spider-Man 2, you know what this feels like? Spider-Man 3. This feels like Spider-Man 3.
Wow, that's so the problem. True. It does feel like Spider-Man 3.
And like, you just brought up all those things. Let me give you another one. We haven't even brought up the zombie children. Like, there's a whole side story of the zombie children having their blood harvested. And I'm watching it going like, what does this have to do with the conversation that Matt had with the Punisher on the rooftop? Like that feels like ages ago. Like, what are we doing? Right. Like we had something and then you chose to run with ninjas and zombie children that never even really get fleshed out. Like the end of the war, quote unquote. Well, that's not the end of the war because of the Defenders, but the end of the war here in season two is like, I guess just Matt and Elektra fighting like only 20 ninjas on a rooftop. That was the whole war. Like they didn't dive into anything with the hole. They don't really fully explain the zombie children. Right. It's just like Nobu really, really wants the black sky. And it's the lamest reveal I can remember. I'm sorry, this is so harsh, but it's bad, dude.
No.
It's really bad. Like that's the reveal is that it's her. And then she is like the unstoppable, immovable object, and yet she dies at the end of this easily? Like, what? Are we, like, the whole plan for Nobu was we're going to do all the zombie children stuff just so that we can get with the black sky, who happens to just be Elektra. You could have just had a conversation with her?
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense, Robbie. It really doesn't.
Yeah. No, it's like it bothers me because it's funny. Like I'm so obviously obsessed with curation and making stories out of kind of existing things. And so whenever I watch something, I'm always thinking like, does this belong in my does this belong in my personal canon? Like if I could edit this some, like what I always say with like. I like to think of the Raimi trilogy being a Raimi duology because those first two movies work really well. And the third one doesn't really add anything to that. And there's a part of me that's like, as I look back on this, I'm like, man, yeah, if we ended with the end of episode 9, or actually, you know what, episode 10, because I really loved the Matt Fisk conversation in the prison. Like,
oh, it's so good.
If we ended there, you know, and then like picked back up more or less where season three is, or even, you know, had some level of the Defenders to kind of set Matt up in the way that he's supposed to in season three. Like, I just don't think anything would be lost.
You're totally right. And it leads me perfectly into my second hot take, which I'm going to let you say for me. And this is because I know you know me, not because we've talked about this off air at all. Here's my second hot take. This shares something so in common with Miss Marvel. What is it?
Oh, man.
Wow. I really thought you'd get it easily.
Well, like my first thought is like the like random midway introduction of the villains. But
it's just whenever they allow the show to be about Punisher, Fisk.
Oh, right.
Karen Foggy trying to track that down. Daredevil having to really struggle with his principles of killing people or not. And the way that the Punisher is bringing that to light, a la Killmonger. Like, it's so good. It's so good. And then almost night and day, like Miss Marvel, whenever they talk about the zombie children, the ninjas, the hand, Elektra, Stick, The Black Sky. Mm-hmm. It's atrocious. I mean, it's like almost unwatchable to me. I found myself so not caring. And that's my second outtake. It's just like, it's almost like bipolar. They could literally cut it in half, cut that out, and I would love it. So
it's so true, because like whenever I was watching the second chunk, I was trying to watch it while I was getting work done, because I remember it was one of our just a crazy busy season, and I remember I couldn't because I was so into like the trial scenes with Frank and all that stuff. And then this was the opposite. Like I was like, okay, like I'm gonna actually sit down and watch these intentionally, not casually. And I just kept like zoning out during these, specifically the scenes that you're talking about. And I will talk about like redeeming parts of those in a bit, like slightly redeeming parts. But yeah, no, I totally agree. And that's, man, it's so weird.
It's so strange. By the way, I don't think it's the actress that plays Elektra. I actually think, this is hot take, she's doing a pretty good job. It's not her fault, I don't think.
No.
I think it's the writing is so bad.
It's not a well-written character.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's so a couple things that I noticed that fit with this point. Like, and again, I'm thinking back to how it was done in the comics and maybe it just was not ever going to be adaptable. I kind of feel like it could have been had the pacing been better, but the ninjas, like... Okay, I remember in part two...
There's just too many ninjas. Get rid of a lot of the ninjas, please.
We talked in part two about how, like, you know what? Like, the ninja stuff at that point was not so bad. Like, it gave us some good Daredevil action. And because I was coming in thinking, like, oh, wow, like, the ninjas are a big part of this. And here, it's just... it's night and day. Where it makes me think, yes, there are ways to maybe do the ninja thing that works, because like I thought the Nobu scene in season one was good. And I think that there were parts of that in early parts of season two that were good. But what's so telling to me is think about this compared to a movie like Avengers, like the first Avengers. And Whedon is able to make me feel like it is somehow appropriate and okay that there are aliens like holding these people hostage in a bank. Like in that moment, I'm never like, okay, like this is a little much, when I kind of should be, but it just, it works like in the pacing and the way the characters are reacting to it. Like you believe that it's like, okay, I guess like if aliens were to break through, this is kind of how we feel. I feel none of that with the ninjas here. Like, there's never a moment where I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, this scene where, like the scene when the ninjas are just shooting cops with arrows, I was like, what are we doing? Like, what is happening here? Why is there, like, a group of ninjas that are, like, it's like a scene out of, like, Lord of the Rings in the middle of Hell's Kitchen, and... I don't know. Like, you get some obligatory lines from cops and stuff that are like, oh my God, ninjas. And I know they're trying to do a little bit of that, like, Avengers ground thing. But the problem is, like, I think the biggest issue for me is we never get any understanding as to, like, who the Hand is, why they are just ninjas. Like, that's never explained. It's just, it's like a given. Well, yeah, I mean, you know.
They're ninjas.
They're ninjas.
Oh, yeah.
But there's no, like, we don't know where the organization started. Like, we don't know, like, if it actually even has Asian roots. Like, all we know is that they're just ninjas. And that is ridiculous.
I wish we could just call this episode Ninjas, Ninjas, and More Ninjas. This is where the ninjas really show up. Which brings me to my third hot take. I have never been more right about something than I was in our last episode about the action and the action that is generated because of these ninjas. You know, there is a really fine line I'm learning of what I'm looking for when it comes to the stakes, the action in these kinds of films. I was having this conversation with Annika the other night. If nobody ever dies... The punches don't feel like they have weight. The situations don't feel dire ever. That's one side of it, where it's like we sometimes need somebody to die or somebody to take a hit to show you that this is real.
Right.
I'd give you examples of that like crazy. I've talked about Black Widow. I think Black Widow does that really well. I think Black Panther does it really poorly. I think that a simple thing like Claw getting his arm cut off in Age of Ultron makes that a lot more serious all of a sudden. Right. There's things like that.
Even
right?
the scene in Civil War, like whenever Tony's going after Bucky and he like almost gets shot, but he takes it in his palm, like little moments like that of like, oh, wow, stakes.
But if nobody ever dies or you don't ever do that, that's when we're calling for like, I need a death or something to be like, hey, this is real. Like, we're not just messing around. But conversely, there's a line there, because if you start just literally killing everybody and you start just throwing in like literally hundreds of ninjas just to have them die, you start thinking like, this also now doesn't matter, Rob. Like the next time 10 more ninjas show up with Matthew, are you really thinking to yourself like, oh man, he might not get out of this one? No, you've seen him just kill like 100 ninjas. So none of it matters. It's the most boring action because you're like, cool, he punched another one. Cool, he did another flip. They're not actually going to kill Daredevil by some random ninja that showed up.
Right.
So nothing has weight anymore. Or conversely, if everybody just dies, like every time, like Tepper, right? He tampers with the body. Next time I see him, dead. The Assassin's Creed thing I always talk about. Every time you leave a character like that, you come back, dead. Reyes, dead. It's like at some point, the deaths now don't matter anymore because they're so frequent. So it's funny.
Yeah.
It's like there's a line there that you have to get right. And this is getting it really wrong on the other side of it.
Well, even with, you know, I still, as much as I thought the scene was effective, I still don't understand why they killed off Ben Urich so quickly in this show. And I feel like you feel that absence a lot in season two. And that was a great death scene. And I think that they honored that well in the show. So I'm not, I think that was executed well.
And I would also say that the action is better in season one because of that, though. Like, you do feel like stuff could happen and it's not too much. So I remember
that's true.
I remember the first time I watched this show, to me, like the epitome of what this show can be in the action is that very first hallway fight to save that kid who's being trafficked.
Yeah, right.
That's when like everything felt like it had a purpose. And I didn't know what was going to happen. And this is also like really early on. So like, I don't know how much of a beating Matt can take. But by like the 700th time of him killing a ninja, getting hurt almost to the point of death, Punisher getting hurt to the point of death, and somehow they're just fine again to keep going. Every time, every fight just starts feeling like a waste of time. That's my second.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And that's well put. That's what I was feeling whenever it's like, it doesn't feel like a natural arc with a beginning and an end. It feels like instead of being kind of like one big mountain that we're climbing and then descending, it's like we're just doing constant hills through this entire season.
It's like we're getting good dialogue and there's some really cool stuff happening with Punisher or Punisher and Karen. Then it's all of a sudden like, well, we got to get like 10 more ninjas as an obstacle. So they throw them in real quick.
Right.
And they have the quick fight.
Well, so I think that arguably the best part of this whole season is John Bernthal. Like I think what he brings to the character, the interactions he gets out of other characters, I think it's great. Sometimes it's really well written. Sometimes it's fine and he elevates it. But even
wholeheartedly agree. If they ever bring the Punisher back, it has to be him. Continue.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally. I am not that it'll be interesting at some point to talk about that. Cause I thought he did a great job in the Punisher series. And I know we have a lot of listeners that are really into that.
Shut
up,
Cam.
Did not really. Yeah. I watched the first season. I haven't watched the rest, but I will say that I think that character has to be used in the right way. And I think they actually did use him really well here. But given that, I still felt that with him, with that storyline. Like, in the last chunk of episodes, I'm like, okay, like, I the reveal is good with the blacksmith. Like, I see where we're going with that. But also, like, man, this is, like, drawn out. Like, he gets out of prison, and then it's like he has the two different clandestine meetups with Karen and, like, all of the, like I was saying, like, near-death moments with the Punisher, where it's like, I feel like we had covered, like, whatever that's trying to give us, whether it's emotionally, whether it's just, like, trying to show us his badassery, or the level to which he doesn't care about self-preservation. Like, I feel like that was all shown to us in the first four episodes.
Right.
Really well.
Oh, so good.
And
perfect.
And then the second four episodes did a great job of kind of getting into this, like, through the courtroom drama and through the Matt and Frank conversations. Like, that was another kind of additional exploration of his trauma and sort of his anger. And then, I love, to your point, if we had extended that.
I loved him standing up to Fisk. Did you? I loved
that. Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going
to
say.
We never see anyone talk to Fisk that way. So that's fun.
Yeah. And don't you, again, I get, like, the blacksmith story. I see how they were finishing that out. But one, I don't know if I like the connection to, you know, maybe if we hadn't ever gone back to the general, it would have felt really random. And so I think that does feel like it's tying up a not a loose end, but making a nice circle. But the amount, like, what part of me is like, what if in the prison, you know, when he's with Dutton, I think is his name, like, what if he just straight up told him, right, that, like, that's the guy behind it? Or somehow, like, he gave him something to where he knew in that moment, and that was the reveal.
Yeah, but nobody knows. Out. Nobody knows.
No, but it's the know, way know, that it's like, man, like, the fact that we start out the series or this series of episodes when it's just like Frank's getting out, and then I just feel like it felt like a worse version of his arc from the first four episodes, and it frustrated me because I didn't feel like I was getting any real development at that point. And it felt like they were just, like, burning time. Like, it's like I...
Totally.
They knew they had to have 13 episodes worth. And so they just kind of, like... It's like the show ended 10 episodes in, and then they're kind of just, like, at least with those plots, just kind of, like, treading water until we can finally close it out and have the, like, neat monologue moment showing all the characters and where they end.
I did like seeing him help Matt at the very end, though, shooting some of those people.
So, okay, I did and I didn't, because I like where that leaves their relationship, but I just, again, that was so weirdly executed to me. Why was he there?
How did he know about it?
Like, I'm sure people could say, like, oh, you know, people are talking about it on the police radios, but I'm like, so he's like, we see him going and getting all these guns, and he's like, then turning on the police radio and hearing about this thing. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to go drive over here and climb this rooftop, and I'm going to help Daredevil in case he needs it. Like, just
that's so true. I'm sorry. I take it back.
Like, I like the moment, right? Like, I like the idea that the next time we see those characters together, which I don't think we have again, I like the idea that they would have kind of this mutual understanding of, like, we disagree with how we do this, but we're not necessarily enemies. But I just, like, I'm like, again, if you cut out all the hand stuff or minimized it or made it some kind of, like, you know, it's like if you kept some of the mystique around, like, that you had in even season one and early season two, whenever I was like, man, I don't know what you're talking about. The ninja stuff isn't that bad. When it's just, like, little hints of it, like, little bits that are still, I think, not as good as, like, the Fisk and Castle bits, but, like, you know, they at least show you what's going on with Elektra and all that stuff. And, like, if they had just done a little bit and then actually, you, like, made it somehow make sense for him to have, for Castle to be involved in that final showdown.
I love how frustrated it makes you so much.
I just, I think it goes it this is like our Spider-Man 3.
It's like Spider-Man 3. Release the Earl Cut. Release the Earl Cut. I want to watch it right now.
I'm just, it's like the when you see the ingredients there and you're just like, I don't get how they did it this way. And it also, like, final thought in this rant, like everything I'm saying just makes me not even frustrated. It just kind of makes me laugh at all of the
sure
people that are so afraid of what Disney's going to do to Daredevil, because I'm like, don't act like don't for a second act like Netflix was just so carefully handling this character.
Totally.
That they just had a beat on it every time he showed up. It was excellent. Because that's just not true.
Yep.
It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/redcircle.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Okay, that's perfect. That's my next hot take. And by the way, I'm giving two more hot takes here, then I'm done. There are some things I really like, so don't.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and I think the reason
we
get
talking
so
about the things we liked.
Well, I think the reason we get so fired up about these episodes, and I hope our listeners know this, is because we care. Like, because the ingredients are there. Like, if we're just lighthearted joking the whole time, that means we don't even think the ingredients are there. Like, it's not even worth wasting right. our time. But like, the reason you get fired up about Spider-Man 3 is because it was set up so perfectly to be this elite film, and then
right.
ugh. And then that's kind of how I feel here. Like, the first four episodes of this are so cool. And then it just kind of slowly goes downhill. So my two other hot takes. Yeah. Just when we compare the Disney Plus vibe versus the Netflix vibe, man, season 3 of Daredevil is so good and probably tops a lot of the stuff that Disney Plus has done. There's parts of season 1 that are that way, but parts of season 1 that dip as well and don't have that consistency, right. just like we talk about Disney Plus. At times.
Right.
But holy cow. It's been a little bit of time since I watched episodes 1 through 8. So meaning like it's been months since we did that episode. So I popped on episode 9 after all of She-Hulk. Right. Think about that. So I watched the first 8.
Well,
then I had
yeah.
a chance to watch like She-Hulk, probably Love and Thunder, and now Wakanda Forever, and then come back to this. Plus, I'm rewatching the whole MCU. So I've watched like 20 MCU films in between the last time I talked about this.
Wow.
And,
yeah.
you know, so putting it on with that in mind, wow, Robbie, wow. It is shocking from the second you hit play how brooding this show actually is.
Yeah.
Like, it's, dare I say, drainingly brooding. Like, I put it on and Annika and I are just like, every conversation, Robbie, is so intense. It's like they wrote every bit of dialogue to be the emotional showstopper. Think about the way Foggy and Matthew talk to each other.
Right.
It's so intense with every line. You're never there for us. You don't care about me. Maybe we should do something else. Well, maybe we should. Never smiling. Like, literally, Robbie, it's like, I just want them to have a normal conversation. And again, I'm not saying that about all of Daredevil. I'm just saying for this chunk, if you haven't seen it in a while, just like what you said, that was my third or fourth hot take, wherever I'm at. Don't act like Disney doesn't know something about this, okay? Because, like, I know that people love the darkness, and I do too, but this is not the solution. To have every line be this is not it, okay?
Right.
So.
No, I mean, it's there are a couple things there. One, I feel like, so whenever this show first started, I heard a lot of folks say that they were going for, in addition to some of the Frank Miller subject matter, a lot of the Brian Michael Bendis vibe, which is another really well-loved Daredevil run from the very beginning of Bendis's career. And Bendis is kind of the Aaron Sorkin of comics in a number of ways, but mostly just in the way he writes dialogue. Like, it reads very Sorkin-esque. And so I think that's relevant here because the Bendis run is also pretty broody, but his dialogue is so snappy and fun to read that it has, like, what when you're like defending Iron Man 2 and you say, like, yeah, the plot's kind of a mess, but the dialogue's still fun to listen to. That's like how the Bendis plot wasn't a mess anyway, but like the dialogue was so fun that it just makes it fun to read. And here, it's like they're using the same vibe.
This is the opposite
of that era.
It's not fun.
But yeah, it's not like, it's not well, because even the intense scenes that Bendis writes, he does this kind of, it's like a, yeah, it's like a Sorkin meets Tarantino thing when he's doing like the way that the crime bosses talk to each other. Like, it's just fun to read. It's riveting.
Right, right. It just feels like they lost the entertainment of it. Like, we lost that aspect. This is supposed to be something I like to watch.
Right, right. And that's the thing. Like, I think that this show is just, at least season, well, again, but then, like, the Punisher monologue was so great. Although I think a lot of that was Jon Bernthal's performance. So, yeah, I think I can say what I'm going to say now fairly confidently. I do not think season 2 of Daredevil was very well written for the most part. I think that, like, as I think back to the things I really loved, I almost feel like it was like a performer stepping up and taking either like a just fine script or like maybe like a slightly above average script in certain episodes.
Yeah, but there were parts I thought were really written well. Again, those first four episodes to me are spectacular.
But again.
Okay, we can agree to disagree. Maybe you're saying the performance is elevating that.
It's been too long. I know I gave those episodes really good grades, so I probably agree with you. I think that it's just, as I'm looking back at the moments I love, it feels like performers that are like killing it in certain moments. It doesn't feel like there are moments in MCU movies where I'm always like, this is why I love Marcus and McFeely. This is why I love Taika Waititi's writing. Like, I never have a moment like that when I'm watching Daredevil.
And you're kind of talking about the dialogue part of writing.
Right,
but I would also add the plot part of writing ties into all this as well. Like, when they sat down and scripted out the whole season, like, I intently watched this all the way through, totally focused. And it's fascinating for me to now look at my notes from a year ago. Remember, this is like a year ago that I started doing this.
Oh, right, yeah.
So here are my final notes at the end of every episode. I have notes for every episode. Totally broken down. And I got to the very end of the show, and I remember texting you like, what the heck did I just watch? And here's all I wrote in bold, right? So I have all these little notes, and this is my full page at the very end of the season. And you'll think this is perfect with what we're talking about. I wrote, show is best with Punisher. what a letdown with the hand. Again, this is the first time I'd ever seen this, okay? I wrote, what the heck was the hole? The mind-controlled kids? Question mark. The everlasting life thing? Question mark. The cult thing? Question mark. And then I wrote, Matt betrayed Foggy, Karen, and his job. That was my final notes of the whole thing. Like, I don't even know that we got follow-up on the writing of the plot on any of this stuff.
That's so true. Which I'm sure, like, it's funny that we end up making comparisons to like, I don't know if it's subconscious, but whenever I bring up Iron Man 2 lately, I think of that as a movie that had that was maybe given too much to do, and maybe that's what happened here. They were like, you have to do Defenders setup work. I'm sure that there was some level of that, but that doesn't, like, at least in Iron Man 2, all the setup that they're doing is explained and or paid off on some level in that film. Like, you're not ending, you don't end Iron Man 2 being like, wait, who the heck was Black Widow? Like, they at least gave you enough to know why that was included and the significance of that. They're not like, well, yeah, you don't know anything about who that was or why they were here, but come see Avengers and then you'll find out. Like, they at least kept the integrity of the film in place. And I feel like this is such a lead-in to the Defenders, which explains my kind of like merging of them in my memory, that, yeah, you're right. Like, there are things that are just not really explained here. And which is why they feel so removable. Like, and man, to your comment about him betraying Foggy and Karen, I think back to the Earl cut, what just frustrates me is, like, I love the final scene. Like, I love him showing her the Daredevil mask. That is a moment that could have been great if that had been a tension at the heart of the entire season. Like, the way that they were setting it up, but that's not what they did.
Dude, you're literally setting me up perfectly as if we had planned this out, because that is literally my final hot take. And then I'll let you wrap up with whatever you want to wrap up with. But leading me perfect into my final point of the whole thing. Can we just for a second talk about Karen? Because it's just, it's not all bad or anything. I'm not even joking about that. But it's just such a strange journey for the character of Karen throughout this entire season. Like, let me just bring up some random things that are going through my head. Like, she gets really attached to Frank. Like, I understand they're trying to tell me her motivation of caring about justice and seeing this different side of him, but it escalates to the point where she's, like, sneaking out of police protection to go with Frank. She's having, like, really intense conversations about love with Frank at the diner.
Yeah.
She's so intent on her job that she is literally, again, this is how they're writing her, throwing her into, like, the most dangerous situations of all time. She's witnessing every murder. She's not telling people about it. She's almost getting shot, like, 15,000 times. She's the one that gets abducted at the end again. I mean, just like Spider-Man 3, this is worse than Mary Jane.
Yeah.
This is, like,
that's such a great point.
It's so similar to Spider-Man 3. That was not my main takeaway coming into this, but
can I say one thing, just since you brought it up, that, well, one thing that furthers your point, and one that one thought that I had that I think redeems a little bit, and then I'll let you continue. I thought the same thing whenever they were getting into the love conversation. One thing I will give the writers that I'm just blasting credit for is they at least, you find out that he's just basically, he's been killing time. So he's kind of drawing that conversation out of her because he's just waiting until these folks show up, and he was kind of using her as bait. So that, like, the conversation itself from Karen's perspective is no less weird for that. So I think that your critique is 100% valid, but I did at least appreciate them, like, explaining why Frank had any interest in talking to Karen about her love life.
Well, and to be clear, I'm not even saying, like, I have a well-formulated critique here. I'm just saying, when you look at Karen, there's just a lot of strangeness in this. I mean, she finds herself in the conversation with the blacksmith. She figures it out. So like after right. she's already been through hell, she is now the one being held at gunpoint at the end. Then she's the one that's like begging Frank not to kill him. And then it's supposed to mean something about her journey there. But then he does, and she's still okay. And I just don't know. Like her finding herself that, is, and then like the way they paint that she's so in love with Matt, and then how that just falls off the map so quickly. And then my biggest gripe, just like Spider-Man 3, I just can't get over how long they drag out that she can figure out every plot in the entire series. She's the one that does all this, but she can't figure out that Matthew's Daredevil.
And that's then, so true. And she's supposed to be this like genius investigator.
And it takes the whole season. Why did they drag that out the whole season? Matthew clearly trusts Karen enough, even in season one. So,
right.
And then when they finally give us that moment, I've told you this on a different episode. I can't remember which one. I think Doctor Strange. Those are my favorite moments of the superhero revealing. Maybe Miss right. Marvel too. Miss Marvel, I think too. Revealing their powers to somebody else when it's been hidden this whole time. Because there's some weird part of me that just as a fan loves to see what the other reaction is. Because I'm so putting right. myself in the place of like, okay, if this is real, like if you all of a sudden told me, Kyle, I got to tell you something, I can fly right. and I have like right. lasers that come out of my eyes. I'd be like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? And so I always want that reaction to be so huge. Remember we talked about Doctor Strange, yeah. like does Christine quite enough, like, you know, right. like freak out about, and they do, but like, does she really, like, do I get that moment fully? She should be like, right. this is the most insane thing that's ever happened. And that's what I want.
Right.
And then like,
yeah, literally.
On the other side, I thought like Miss Marvel handled it well, like when she does tell her parents and stuff. But then uh-huh. the reveal to her mom is kind of like, shouldn't that have been bigger? Her mom just saw yeah. her like run away, fly away, basically, on these like glass tiles. What?
Right.
Okay, so like,
yeah,
I really am like sensitive about how they handle those moments. And so it makes me so mad that Karen can't figure this out earlier. The writers don't have Matthew tell her earlier. And then when he does tell her, she's like, oh, and that's kind of the end of the season. What? I want a little more development on like this thing that you've dragged out for 2 full years. I want to know, like Karen of all people would be like, oh my gosh, that explains everything. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's just Karen yeah, is I mean, a strange I, character in this season. End of rant. That's it for me.
Man. Well, one, that's why I keep coming back to the Spider-Man 2 comparison and what it could have been. And that's so funny. You're so right that it is instead Spider-Man 3. But if it were Spider-Man 2, you know, like I thought Raimi actually did a really good job of getting from that kind of ambiguous place where he left the first film to like MJ kind of knows through most of season 2. But then she actually knows. But then that final shot of her as he's swinging off, which I just love so much, is this like, it's like a frown ultimately. Like she's like worried and kind of unsure. And she's, because she's caught in the middle of these things. And I feel like that's where they kind of were going here. And that's where I'm like, if you had just stuck that scene closer to the end of like episode 10, like I was saying, where we've gotten a little bit of the Matt Elektra stuff. Like if we had gotten equal parts Matt and Karen with Matt and Elektra, which is kind of where we were at the end of that second part of season 2, then, you know, ending in this way where it's like I'm kind of torn between these two parts and either leaving us in that tension with him telling Karen or like having it be something that is actually complex instead of just telling us it's complex. Like, give us the way that this ends loses a lot of the weight it would have had if it had come earlier in the season, because now we've seen Matt, like, to your earlier point, like, I don't really like Matt at this point in the show, because he went like fully I'm in love with Karen and then has gotten so sucked back into the Elektra stuff that he's now like yeah, I'm going to give up my entire life and the thing that I initially was going to give up my entire life for, which was New York. Now I'm going to also give up New York just so that I can follow you around.
Right.
Like, that is wild based on what we've gotten with this character for the prior, like, 20 episodes. Like, yep. He's so dedicated, right? He's, like, so self-sacrificial. And I get right. That maybe they're saying that's a departure, right? Like, he's learning to live like a lecturer or something. But again, if that's the case, not executed well. Wow.
I'm also just thinking about how, like, it's so mind-blowing that Matthew is hiding his daredevilness from Karen because he's, quote, trying to protect her. It's clearly not working, Matt. Every time, I mean, she has gone through everything this season. Just tell her. It's not working. She's been abducted. She's been shot at. She's been in really sketchy situations. Matt, it makes no sense anymore.
Well, and whenever and he like actually Claire, does
Claire's
it.
Talking to him like, go talk to Foggy. No, I can't because it's putting him in danger. Foggy's going to get shot in like an episode after that. So it's not working.
Yeah.
They're already in danger.
That's true. You are close enough to them to put them in. They're actually in more danger by not knowing what's going on.
Exactly. At this point, Karen's closer to the truth than you are. So you might want to talk to her about it.
Right. Well, also, the reason I went on like the whole Elektra rant about Karen is because I feel like by the time he does that, I'm like, what? Why are you even doing this now? Like, you have basically just been ignoring this person. And I guess it's supposed to be this like, hey, this is what's been going on. I'm sorry moment. But I'm like, well, what are you trying to make Karen be in your life? Because if they're, again, not looking ahead, but just in this moment, if we're still supposed to imagine that there's some kind of relationship between Matt and Karen, I do not buy it at all. Because Matt was just like 5 minutes ago in the episode, like professing his love for this character that we met like five episodes ago. So I'm like, it's like a scene that in isolation. Same thing with like the Punisher showing up scene, like in a different world. Yeah, I love it. Like even just exactly as it exists in a different context. But the way that they gave it to us, it's like, did you feel any real weight in that?
Of course not. That's what I'm saying.
I've got a couple things I like to end on a positive note, but then like one more thing. I had a couple, but I can't remember the other ones now. One more just ridiculous moment to me that just the way it was, again, talking about execution. In the hospital, whenever Claire, it's like whenever the demon kids wake up and zombie kids wake up and one of them like stabs the nurse. Linda, I think is her name.
Yeah.
Or Lisa. Anyway, it's like, obviously that is a sad thing that happens. Like I recognize there's supposed to be some weight there, but it was like comical to me for some reason. Like it felt so weird and like out of like talking, like again, talking about like the ninjas showing up and it just not feeling appropriate. Like that just happening, like this nurse just getting stabbed with a sword and then Rosario Dawson, who I'm sure was coached and directed to respond in this way, does this like battle cry as a response. Like she just like, it's not like a no or like, oh my God, Lisa. It's this like, ah, thing. And like she's like a warrior that's like she's like Batman that just injected herself with adrenaline. And I'm like, this whole scene is so strange. Like everything about how everybody acted was just the weirdest thing. I have no greater point there.
Also, it's the Assassin's Creed thing I'm talking about. Like the dad murdered by the son, the nurse stabbed through the chest. And then how do these people always get away? The main characters, like Rosario Dawson is holding the girl who gets stabbed, but then she has time to react and just get out of there every time. Right. And like, or like, I was laughing to myself when Matthew and Elektra have that whole conversation about love. Like, what is everyone else waiting for? They're waiting for them to have that convo. Then Elektra on the roof gets stabbed and he has a whole thing with her as she's dying while Nobu's just watching. And right. then he comes back and fights. Right. Like, Nobu, that's your time to go in if you want to take him right. out.
Also, why is, like, there's the scene where Stick finally kills Nobu, but where is Matt at that point? Like, why wouldn't Matt, who was so determined to bring down Nobu, who just killed this woman that he loves, why, like, knowing that this guy always comes back to life, like, that's his shtick.
I guess he thought he got not? Him.
But, like, obviously not. Like, he set him on fire in the first season and he came back.
So,
like,
you're going. That's so true.
Like,
maybe there's part of it where it's like he doesn't really want to kill him because that's kind of breaking the code. So that's like, well, hey, if he dies from this, then I know.
But he had the whole speech where he's like, we'll put him in bars and then we'll dethrone him and everyone will know he's just a man. But I'm like, where did that, like, I guess that he's just so heartbroken that he just has lost interest in the whole thing. But then it's like,
from this girl who he's never had a relationship longer than like a day.
That's true. But yeah, maybe his attention span just isn't actually very long.
Remember when she was like, when he was like, we can do it. I love you for who you are. Let's just do this together. Literally 20 seconds later, she comes out, slits the boy's throat, and he's like, I'll never be with you. This is just who you are. It's like, wow.
Dude, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like we get like a whole season of development in every episode of their, like, with their relationship. Like, I am so, but I don't feel like they've packed enough into where I've lived with it. I just feel crazy. Like, I'm like, if Candace came in while I was watching this and it's like, oh, who are those characters? Like, what's their deal? I would be like, I would need the length of this podcast to tell you because I don't even know. I just think that earlier in this bunch of episodes, there's this moment where Matt had, I think it was maybe either in the episode you were talking about or right after, where he's talking about why he can or can't be with Elektra forever, depending on the moment. But he's like, this is who you are. And then Nobu is like, you are the black sky. And Matt's like, no one can tell you who you are. And she's like, but you told me. And he's like, yeah, I was wrong. I shouldn't have because no one can. And that's like the end of the conversation. And I'm like, wait. So what? Like, what? What does that even mean? And why? And like, then for like the rest of the episode, that becomes Matt's like mantra to Elektra. Like, no one can tell you who you are, as though that's been this like deep seated part of the character and the way that they've interacted. When really, that's just like a, like, that just popped up, and it's the flip of the way that he's been acting with her anyway. It's right. just like
I love it. It's so all much. Like,
but. All that said, briefly, I did write down several things that I enjoyed here. And, you know, we might as well end on like a sweet note, palate cleanser. One, John Paisano's music is still fantastic.
Especially bring him to the MCU, please. Thank you.
Yes. And that final monologue with Karen, like talking about elevating something. I thought that was a well-written part anyway, but the way that he adds to that is huge.
Bring him back for Daredevil.
I love some of the setup here in general. Like, I don't want to get into it now because we talked about a lot of it already, but I think the execution could have been tighter in several ways. But I do appreciate the attempt, like Punisher getting all of his gear and deciding to use the skull. Like, the parts of it overwrought, but I appreciated it. And same thing with like the Billy Club, which you may or may not know is like a big part of Daredevil's thing in the comics.
So cool.
Having the, like, he can use it to like almost web swing, and you get these great scenes with him and Spider-Man. And I would love to see, like, that's what I was saying earlier about wanting more of the kind of acrobatics from Daredevil. And again, hints of that here. But I would love to see that more. We already kind of saw some in She-Hulk.
love that they gave explanation to that weapon. Yep, keep going.
Yes, yeah. And I thought the pacing, like I was thinking about it, the pacing of a lot of that, like specifically the kind of, you know, we always talk about characters in their quote-unquote quintessential form. And I think getting Daredevil to that, like I, again, could you have cut out 5 episodes of the season? Absolutely, probably should have. But I do like the, like, you know, we meet him and he's got the black suit on, and then like him getting the suit and then it getting kind of upgraded and him finally getting the billy clubs. And that's like, okay, yeah, that's like comics Daredevil. And then same with Punisher, and them showing that rather than like him just showing up in season 2 with the billy club. Like, I, you know, I appreciate the attention there. I do feel like, in general, one of the things that I like about season 2 is just the amount of in-costume Daredevil that we get. And I know that's a me thing more than a you thing. Like, one of the bummers for me, not an actual bummer that would, like, factor into my review of it, but, like, the like, comic book nerd in me wishes that I could have seen him actually suit up in Daredevil season 3.
Mm.
I get why he didn't, and I think it was really effective the way that they handled that. But like, that's just the part of me that, like, whenever I see comic, it's the same part of me that, like, gets a little frustrated with the amount of time that Spider-Man spends unmasked in the Holland trilogy, where
sure.
It's like, I get it, I think it works well for the story, but I, you know, like, I like seeing, like, I like seeing the characters in their costumes, and so I do appreciate the amount of that that we get here. And especially because I think it's the most we ever get. Like, we get some of it in Defenders and then none of it again until She-Hulk, which I also thought was done well.
Wow.
Same with Elektra's little fork blade things, whatever you call those. They explain how she gets those, you know? So, like, they're giving us all of the... I like that somebody in the writing room was like, let's take the time to introduce this stuff thoughtfully. Last couple things... The Matt Elektra romance, as I've kind of said now ad nauseum, largely did not work for me. However, I did think that there were parts of the final conversation before they go out that did work emotionally. Not really character development wise, for reasons we've already discussed, but like, I at least felt like the performances were on point enough to where I was like, I was feeling some stakes, but then I was writing my notes and I was like, you know what? This is kind of redeeming it. And then we got to the actual death scene, which I thought was not well handled and kind of undid some of that. Like, if you go back and watch it, there's a moment where, like, when her head falls and she's actually dead, it's like I feel like I'm watching like a high school Shakespeare play a little bit.
Stop.
Because it's so overdone. Like, it's so like, and now I'm dead. And it's like, okay. But anyway, but my point is there were moments where they found it, and it makes me agree with you that I don't think it's the actors. I think that when they're given something that they can work with, that they can have chemistry.
Hey, don't worry. They're going to try it again in Defenders. So you'll get another shot at it.
Oh, gosh.
She's not really dead.
here we go. And then, yeah.
Just know this. This is comfort to you. That somebody that was making the Defenders watched that and said, you know what we need more of? We need to try this again. Like, let's bring her back to life and see if they can re-save each other. This is the one thing we need to focus on.
Let's have this conversation, but in a hole. And everyone's like, greenlit, Netflix money. Finally, I just noted, yeah, I do like the moment at the end, like the eye contact between Punisher and Daredevil. It did feel forced to me, like I said, but I think it's in general, the last couple minutes of this episode, it was another of those, like, it's almost how I feel about The Office on some level, where sometimes I'm tempted to like watch through a certain point. Like, I don't, you know more specifically than I do, but say like season 7 and then just skip to the finale. Cause I love the finale so much as an ending, but I think you kind of have to wade through some not great stuff to get there. And I feel a little bit like that about the end of this, where I'm like, you know, it's emotional. You're wrapping things up. for the most part, it lands. I even thought the stick, like, you're the toughest bastard I know or whatever he says line was kind of nice because Stick has only ever told Matt how inadequate he is.
Yeah, true.
You know, like, there's some good, like, it left me in a spot where I'm like, you know, like, I do ultimately love this character and most of the some of the supporting characters, and I like when it's done well, it's done well. And so it made me interested to watch Defenders, which I'm going to do definitely in the background, but it made me actually excited to watch season 3 because I just remember there being some really, like, out of this world Charlie Cox acting there, and that's,
it's so good.
I'm looking forward to that a lot.
I think I've only seen
season 3 once.
Oh, it's going to blow your mind then. It's so much more focused, Robbie. That's the big takeaway. It's like there's one story, and it's like the antithesis of this. It's just so locked in the whole time. One story, boom, we know what we're doing. Not only that, though, I'm excited for season 3, which will be happening here on Friends From Work Plus, but also I'm just excited to see Matt now more in the MCU because I want to see how this compares now as we go forward, especially his own show coming up. And then, by the way, I want to close this episode by, first of all, thanking everybody sincerely. If you are a subscriber of Friends From Work Plus, like, we're blown away by your graciousness. Like, we love it so much, and it's a huge help to us. And so thank you for being a part of the journey. But secondly, once Wakanda Forever is over, we're going to have a little bit of time to really dive into some Friends From Work Plus conversations. And a couple of things I wanted to get out there on people's radar. Yes, we'll be diving into season 3 of Daredevil. But I would love just like a generic mailbag episode, not just about MCU. Like,
yeah,
I want people to actually call in, get their voicemails on the episode if you're a Friends From Work Plus subscriber, and ask us about anything. Literally an AMA with Friends From Work. I think that'd be kind of fun.
That sounds fun.
And just see where it goes, you know? But also we could do a mailbag specifically for MCU as well. I'm excited to dive into it a little bit more now that we have some time coming up. So this has been really fun, but I still think there's a lot more fun stuff coming.
Yes. So we will see you right back here next time on Friends From Work, the Defenders podcast.
No, I will not be doing that. See ya. Bye.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.